camp. Israeli tanks have been mercilessly pounding the eastern outer skirts of Al-Maghazi refugee camp since the early morning, particularly in the northeast part, in the northeastern parts of the camp. Moving to the southernmost part of the strip in Rafah, two people were killed and five were injured. All were transferred to the European hospital in Khan Yunis after Israeli drones targeted them in the streets. They were just going outside to get some water and some food as the famine continues and carries on hitting the entirety of the population.
Israel informs the United Nations that it has ended its 1967 agreement recognizing a refugee agency working with Palestinians, UNRWA. This comes after Israeli Knesset banned UNRWA from operating in the occupied Palestinian territories. The regime has accused the employees of the UN agency taking part in last year's Al-Aqsa flood operation without providing any evidence. UNRWA has warned that Israel's ban on its operations would lead to the collapse of the humanitarian work in the besieged Gaza Strip. The UN Security Council has also expressed grave concern over Israel's decision, calling on the regime to abide by its international obligations. More than 6 million Palestinians across Gaza, the West Bank, Lebanon, Jordan, and Syria are dependent on the UN agency for their livelihood. It also helps them with education and health services. Well, Palestinians are reeling from raids by both Israeli settlers and military forces across the occupied West Bank. Settler gangs have stormed Beit Aid near Ramallah, setting fire to Palestinian property and vehicles. Footage from the incident showed several charred cars and building walls where vehicles had been torched by settlers. Meanwhile, the Israeli military has raided several areas across the West Bank. Well, the troops abducted at least three more Palestinian youths during the incursions. They also ransacked several homes in a village in Al-Khalil Governorate. Israel has intensified its violence against Palestinians since the regime began its onslaught on Gaza a year ago. Since then, regime's forces have killed nearly 770 Palestinians and abducted at least 11,500 others in the West Bank. Earlier, we talked to our correspondent in Ramallah, Naka Hamad. She says the incident in Beit Aid was unprecedented, as no such settler attack this deep inside Palestinian neighborhoods had ever been recorded before.
Settlers from a nearby settlement attacked Al-Bir city, burning down 20 Palestinian cars and two residential buildings. Fortunately, no human losses were recorded, and many incidents followed the operation of the burning of setting the flames to these properties. As when other nearby Palestinians tried to come to put out the fire, they were faced with a shooting of live ammunition against them. And when the staff of the PRCS, which is the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, ambulances tried to reach to the area where the settlers were attacking the Palestinians, they were faced with direct shooting. As eyewitnesses have told us, the attack was unprecedented. It is not the first time that the settlers attack Al-Bir and the surrounding areas of Al-Bir, but it is the first time that the settlers reach into the Palestinian neighborhoods deep inside a Palestinian neighborhood this deep. Since the last 13 months, since the beginning of the genocidal war in Gaza, the settlers' attacks have increased tremendously. We are talking about more than 2,000 attacks in the last year. Those were the ones that were documented, not to mention the ones that that Palestinians did not report.
Meanwhile, the Israeli regime presses ahead with its deadly raids on Lebanon, targeting the country's hospitals and medical centers. The Israeli military carried out a raid in the vicinity of a hospital in the southern town of Tebnan, causing severe damage and injuring at least 10 civilians. Another hospital in the eastern city of Baalbek, which was crowded with patients, was also struck and sustained damage. Meanwhile, an Israeli raid on the town of Mashkara in western Baqa killed 5 people and injured 3 others. The southern town of Bazireya also witnessed a raid that killed at least 2 paramedics there. Now, according to a previous statement by the WHO, at least 85 Lebanese health workers have been killed and dozens of others injured since late September. According to the Lebanese Health Ministry, over 2,900 people have been killed and 13,000 others injured since the start of the Israeli aggression against the country in October of last year. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh joined us earlier from Lebanon's southern city of Sidon with an update on the Israeli aggression.
So we are in Sidon, or Saida as it is known here in Lebanon. This is considered the gate of South Lebanon. This is one of the first cities that comes right after Beirut as you enter towards South Lebanon. Of course, here this is an area which houses tens of thousands at least of people who were displaced from the deeper south trying to take refuge. And despite that, we still see the Israelis striking this area in various different instances. The strikes is just one of the examples of the Israeli strikes here on residential buildings, and how the destruction has caused, of course, although it is only on the first floor, but of course many of the people who were living in that building specifically had to leave and had to evacuate. And even in the surrounding buildings, although we know that people, when they first came from South Lebanon, there were many apartments that were open for the displaced, even for free, and so they remained here until this strike just several days ago. There were several damages also on the vehicles that are in the surroundings. Some vehicles were also burnt completely, and this is just one of at least 3 other strikes. We learned that there were, in one of the strikes which we visited just earlier, there were at least 3 martyrs and 5 injured. And it seemed that they were all civilians. There was a woman who was going there to check on her apartment with her son, their 13-year-old son. She was killed.
Pro-Palestinian protesters have taken to the streets in Japan and Germany to condemn the Israeli regime's deadly war on Gaza and Lebanon. Japanese protesters marched in the capital, Tokyo, slamming their government's military exercises with the United States, which has been the main supplier of arms and money to Israel. They also voiced their anger over some Japanese firms sending weapons to Tel Aviv. Meanwhile, people in the German city of Munich took to the streets to call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Waving Palestinian and Lebanese flags, they held anti-Israel banners and condemned their government for hosting the, quote, Israeli war criminals. During a similar rally in Paris, a French spokesperson for International Federation of Journalists voiced her anger at the regime's killing of journalists.
Journalists on the ground are not spared. They're deliberately targeted, as is the humanitarian aid that tries to treat or save the wounded, even though the hospitals have been destroyed. Medicines and medical equipment swallowed up in the rubble of the Israeli bombardments.
She further slammed the regime for arresting dozens of journalists while preventing the media from entering Gaza so that it can, quote, kill without witnesses. Parisians held pictures of the journalists killed by the Israeli regime. Since the start of the genocide war last year, 183 journalists have been killed in Gaza alone, exceeding double the annual figure around the world. And at least a dozen others have also been killed in Lebanon since then. Well, the naval forces of Iran and the Republic of Azerbaijan have wrapped up joint exercises in the Caspian Sea, codename Azarex 2024.
These drills were aimed at increasing the level of cooperation between the naval units of the two countries to prevent maritime accidents, collaboration in search and rescue operations, reducing the operation time to rescue vessels in need, paving the way for promoting maritime trade and combating environmental pollution. In fact, in these maneuvers we sought further cooperation and coordination to create a safe environment for the development of maritime trade.
Bazaghi said the drills successfully achieved their intended goals. He stressed that the exercises showed the determination of the Iranian Navy to ensure maritime security in cooperation with other Caspian Sea littoral states. The flotilla admiral said regional states can fully provide maritime security, and the presence of trans-regional countries in the sea under any pretext is unacceptable and intolerable. The Northern Fleet of the Iranian Navy hosted the two-day drills in Bandar Anzali. Two Azerbaijani vessels joined the Iranian destroyer Deleman for aid and rescue exercises. The joint maneuvers were themed cooperation for peace and friendship. Now to the U.S., where authorities there are ramping up security measures in the capital, Washington, D.C., this ahead of the November 5th presidential election amid concerns of potential threats. Stacks of metal security fences have been installed across the city as security vehicles take their positions a day before the vote. Now, these heightened security protocols are in response to the U.S. Capitol attack back in 2021. The incident took place on January the 6th when supporters of former Republican President Donald Trump raided the Capitol. Now, the incident was initiated by Trump's refusal to accept the outcome of the 2020 election. Six people were killed during the ensuing violence. Well, when it comes to the U.S. elections, the amount of money being poured into it has set yet another record. With billions of dollars in campaign donations, the lines become blurred whether the next president will be working for Americans or their donors, like corporations. Well, we're going to get a little bit more on this, joined by Kaveh to give us a full explanation. Kaveh.
Thank you, Marzia. The 2024 U.S. presidential election is on track to be the costliest election in modern history. With all this money going into the elections, what portion of it is from everyday Americans, Main Street as America calls it, and what portion of it is from millionaires and billionaire donors who have expectations of a return of favor? First, Kamala Harris. She has pulled in almost $1 billion in the 3 months since she was approved as the Democratic Party's candidate. She pulled in actually $81 million after announcing her candidacy. That put her with a huge cash advantage over Trump, outraising him almost 3-1, like in September, which he pulled in $388 million. So what about the rules of the game in terms of funding? Well, in the U.S., the Federal Election Commission enforces campaign finance and also transparency. Individuals, organizations, and companies, they can contribute to political campaigns. The figure, $3,300 per candidate per election in the 2024 cycle. Now, the Citizens United ruling represented a turning point on campaign finance. It allowed unlimited election spending by corporations and labor unions, setting the stage for what was called SpeechNow.org versus the FEC 2010, which basically authorized the creation of what's called super PACs. We'll explain that in a minute, which struck down other campaign finance restrictions. So Citizens United was very key in terms of the unlimited election that it actually proposed. Now, here is the deal with the super PACs and the PACs that we just talked about. When it comes to the PACs, the amount of contribution is not limited to just going through an organization. It could be actually directed to the candidate itself. Super PACs can donate unlimited amounts, however, to the independent organizations. PACs can't do that. Super PACs cannot give to the candidates, unlike the PACs. Now, that freedom is where it allows the wealthy to pump as much money as they want to support their preferred candidate. And, well, these are the top companies by election contributions when it comes to PACs. You have the red, the Republicans, and the blue, the Democrats. Almost all, except for the first one that's tied, are Republican shares. So there is a edge there, if we can call it, overwhelming one, that has gone to the Republicans, who have pulled in more money than the Democrats, pointing to how corporations believe that Republicans actually serve their interests more than the Democrats. And in the case of super PACs, well, they have spent staggering $2.6 billion on 2024 federal elections, outpacing spending in any previous cycle. Since the complete figures are not in all the way in terms of the confirmation, the total projected outside spending for the entire election cycle will exceed $5 billion. And when it's all said and done, putting it all together, this is how these two candidates have fared up in terms of what Harris has pulled in. when you take a look at the ranking next to Donald Trump. Again, this amount of money has not just come from ordinary citizens, but wealthy donors combined with the corporation, and that's where the question comes about whether the candidates will work for the people or the big donors.
And with that, brings us to the end of this World News edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
As the fabricated regime of Israel is a product of Britain's imperial machinations, those British politicians who enable its crimes are following a historical pattern. It is a pattern soaked with the blood of Palestinians. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, committing a genocide is clearly not enough for a large bloc within the Zionist regime's ruling coalition. The far-right ministers in the government, backed by some members of Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud party, are intensifying their push for recolonizing Gaza. Their goal of building new settlements in a territory subjected to wholesale destruction is equally despicable and logical. It is in keeping with the logic of the Balfour Declaration. The November 1917 document, which kickstarted a process whereby a Jewish regime would be established in Palestine. The anniversary of the declaration is an occasion to reflect on thinking behind it, as well as its consequences. Arthur James Balfour, Britain's foreign secretary at the time, was under no illusions about what he was doing in issuing that pledge of support for the Zionist movement. His declaration did not specify the contours of the regime being envisaged, which was euphemistically described as a national home. Yet, it did prove vital for creating facts on the ground to use more recent Zionist balance. That is precisely what Balfour intended. In 1919, Balfour wrote a letter to David Lloyd George, then Prime Minister, after an Anglican bishop in Al-Quds had queried British policy towards Zionism. Balfour admitted that there was a weak point in Britain's position as it deliberately and rightly declined to accept the principle of self-determination for Palestine. That would mean asking Palestine's indigenous people, whom Balfour called its present inhabitants, for their views. Balfour wrote, if the present inhabitants were consulted, they would unquestionably give an anti-Jewish verdict, adding that we conceive the Jews to have a historic claim to have a home in their ancient land, provided that home can be given them without either dispossessing or oppressing the present inhabitants. It is important to parse Balfour's choice of words. Before the Balfour Declaration, Muslims, Christians, and Jews lived in Palestine without major hostility and frequently on friendly and harmonious terms. The anti-Jewish verdict that Balfour wished to avoid would not be directed at Jews because of their ethnicity or religion. It would rather be a verdict against a colonization project which would deny basic rights to Palestinians, despite how Britain contended otherwise. The Balfour Declaration was later enshrined in the League of Nations mandate under which Britain would rule Palestine following the First World War. Winston Churchill championed the declaration repeatedly. Churchill stated in 1921 that the declaration must be regarded as one of the facts definitely established by the triumphant conclusion of the Great War. Churchill was an avid supporter of Zionism. Blake Alcott's The Rape of Palestine demonstrates just how avid a supporter Churchill was. In one 1937 discussion on the Balfour Declaration, Churchill spoke about the good faith of England to the Jews, adding, "We are bound by honour, and I think upon the merits to push this thing as far as we can." Pushing this thing, the colonisation of Palestine, as far as we can, required crushing resistance to the Zionist project. During the same 1937 discussion, Churchill sought to justify Britain's approach by saying, "We have every right to strike hard in support of our authority." Churchill personally authorized brutal repression. As colonial secretary in 1921, he was instrumental in sending a specialized police force to Palestine. It was comprised of men who had previously served in Ireland with the British forces known as the Black and Tans and the Auxiliaries. To this day, the Black and Tans are synonymous with immense cruelty during Ireland's War of Independence. The Black and Tans set fire to entire neighbourhoods of Cork City and Bargian, the hometown in North County, Dublin. As Caroline Elkins writes in her book Legacy of Violence, Palestine came to replace Ireland as the official and unofficial training ground for colonial police indoctrination. By 1943, five out of Palestine's eight district police commissioners had previously served with the Black and Tans in Ireland. Just recently, David Lammy, Britain's foreign secretary, suggested that the seriousness of the term genocide is undermined if it is applied to Israel's current war against Gaza. It is understandable that a senior British politician would try to excuse or downplay the Zionist regime's crimes. The Zionist regime is, after all, seeking to perfect crimes which it learned from Britain. When Britain ran Palestine, it set up a concentration camp and resorted to home demolitions, collective punishment, and imprisonment without charge or trial. Douglas Duff, one of the former Black and Tan members who went on to become a police chief in Palestine, wrote about the torture techniques which he used and possibly pioneered. His memoirs indicate that he introduced the practice now called waterboarding to Palestine. The Zionist regime has kept up the tradition he established. Palestinians kidnapped by the Zionist regime troops now occupying Gaza have undergone waterboarding. Testimony gathered by the United Nations Human Rights Office has found. Arthur James Balfour once expressed the desire to see the strengthening and consolidation of the British Empire. The Balfour Declaration reflected such thinking. It was hoped that the Zionists would form for England a little loyal Jewish Ulster in a sea of potentially hostile Arabism. According to Ronald Storrs, Al-Quds-based military administrator. The irony is that Britain's sponsorship of Zionism helped to weaken the empire. as the Zionist movement felt that colonization was not advancing with sufficient speed, it fell out with Britain in 1940s. Some elements in the movement even conducted bombing and assassination campaigns against the British. Concluding that Palestine was unmanageable, the British eventually had to leave that land with their tails between their legs. The British departed Palestine as Zionist forces they had trained were implementing the Nakba, the mass expulsion of Palestinians from their homes. Although the empire has shrunk, many figures in the British establishment still have an imperial mindset. As the fabricated regime of Israel is a product of Britain's imperial machinations, those British politicians who enable its crimes are following a historical pattern. It is a pattern soaked with the blood of Palestinians.
Ocean of Dua.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In today's program, we will listen to a commentary of Ziyara al-Yasin by Sheikh Abdul Raza Bahrani, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
On that morn before the world was born, in the snow, I hear that music near and far. Did we the cadence of divine music hear? Did we the cadence of
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the All Beneficent, the Ever Merciful. All praise belongs to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the best and the last of the prophets, Muhammad, and his pure and infallible progeny and household, especially his last successor, Imam Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance. And may Allah's peace and blessings be upon you and with you, my dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is the Ocean of Dua, and I am Abdul Raza Bahrani. Insha'Allah, I will explain and interpret the passages and sentences of Ziyarat al-Yasin in this series of lectures. Now, let's listen to some passages of this Ziyarat.
The Ziyarah of al-Yasin.
As-salamu alayka, ayyuhal imam al-ma'mun. السلام عليك أيها المقدم المأمول السلام عليك بجوامع السلام.
Peace be upon you, O entrusted leader. Peace be upon you, O favored and expected. Peace be upon you to the ultimate meaning of peace.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum wa al'an adahum ajma'in.
In the previous program, we started talking about another salutation in Ziyara al-Yasin, and that salutation was Assalamu alayka ayyuhal imam al-ma'moon. Peace be upon you, O the trustworthy imam, the trusted and the trustworthy imam, or the protected imam. It is something obvious that God the Almighty has special trusts that not everyone has the capacity to keep those trusts and to have them. And we know that Imam Ajallah Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif has a special trust with himself. You know, here when we use the word Imam, Imam is the leader and is a person who is in front of us and a person whom we follow and we should follow. So when we say that Imam Ali, we are saluting Imam Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, with the title of Imam, it means that we believe that he is our leader. And if we believe that he is our leader, we need to obey Imam alayhi salam. And we know that Imam alayhi salam wants nothing except obedience of God the Almighty and being the true believers in Allah and not committing sin and to observe all acts of worship which are obligatory upon us and to fulfill our duty towards God the Almighty. And of course, sometimes it is hard. It is a difficult task. It is not an easy task. And sometimes even we need to sacrifice our lives for the goal of Imam alayhi salam and for the order of Imam, may Allah hasten his reappearance. So this is very important, to be obedient to Imam alayhi salam, to listen to him wholeheartedly and not disobey him, the way that many of the companions of imams during their lifetimes dealt with imams and the infallible household of the Holy Prophet. May God's peace and blessings be upon them.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. How to pray for the faraj or the relief. Imam Al-Asr Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif to his second representative, Muhammad bin Uthman Rahmatullahi Alayh, addressing the Shias, says, pray a lot for the relief, as indeed it is your relief. One who is disturbed, distressed and heartbroken due to the separation from the Imam, the prayers of such a person, they have two effects. Either the Imam's arrival will be hastened, or the afflictions, the problems, and the distresses of the person praying for the relief of the Imam, they will be removed. As a result, he will be eased, he will be pleased, and will be comforted. In either cases, as Imam Al-Asr Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif has said, وَأَكْثِرُ الدُّعَى لِتَعْجِيلِ الْفَرَجِ فَإِنَّ ذَٰلِكَ فَرَجْكُمْ. Pray a lot for the relief, as indeed it is your relief.
اللَّهُمَّ كُنْ لِوَلِيكَ حُجَّةِ ابْنِ الْحَسَنِ صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا ودليلا وعينا حتى تصبح.
تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا.
The Ocean of Dua, commentary of Ziyara Al-Yassin by Sheikh Abdul Raza Bahrani, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
And the next thing is Ma'mun, and so here one of the most important trusts that has been given to Imam alayhi salam, and Imam alayhi salam has been trusted with that, is Imamat itself. Imamat is something great, a great, and maybe I can say the greatest trust of Allah the Almighty. Just very, very few and very little in number are the people who can tolerate this trust. There are very, very few and rare people who have the capacity to be trusted with Imamat. And that is why when we look at the Holy Quran and the narrations of the Holy Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, we find that even not all the prophets had the capacity to be given Imamat. So Imamat was given just to great prophets of God, like the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his pure and infallible household. And like Prophet Abraham, God's peace and blessings be upon him, as Allah the Almighty mentions in the Holy Quran, that after being successful in different trials and tests, then God the Almighty appointed Prophet Abraham as Imam. And because this is something so much great, and everyone loves to be in that position, the Prophet Abraham asked Allah the Almighty to give this tawfiq to his offspring to be among the imams. And then when Prophet Abraham asked, وَمِن ذُرِّيَّتِي, and from my offspring, God the Almighty said that this is a so much great trust that just very few and rare people can shoulder it. This is a great responsibility. And therefore, God the Almighty says, لَا يَنَالُ عَهْدَ الظَّالِمِينَ, that this, oppressors, those who have wronged themselves and have committed sins and have worshipped gods other than Allah the Almighty, these people do not have the capacity, and these people do not deserve to be imams and to be trusted with this great divine trust of Allah the Almighty. Just very, very few of the people have been given this trust, among whom is Imam Mahdi, ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. And that is why in this salutation we say, peace be upon you, O the trusted and trustworthy Imam and leader. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be the most. close to you throughout my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
U.S. presidential hopeful Donald Trump praised Puerto Ricans on Tuesday, 29th of October, during a Pennsylvania rally, just days after a comedian made a racist joke and referred to Puerto Rico as a floating island of garbage at one of his rallies. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster NBC News has covered this story and tells us more. The podcaster who provoked an angry backlash against Donald Trump's campaign with a racist joke about Puerto Rico reportedly tested out the gag at a comedy club the night before delivering them at Sunday, 27th of October's televised rally at Madison Square Garden. Tony Hinchcliffe, whose 11-minute set has thrown Donald Trump's team into damage limitation mode just a week before the presidential election, made the same quip, calling the territory a floating island of garbage at the Stand Club in New York on Saturday, 26th of October. Citing one of its own producers and three audience members, NBC said the joke bombed, drawing just a few awkward chuckles. Tony Hinchcliffe, who told patrons several times that he would be performing at Donald Trump's rally, responded by saying he hoped it would get a better reaction the following day. The performer's act at the Madison Square Garden event has threatened to undermine Donald Trump's support among Latino voters, including many of Puerto Rican heritage, in battleground states where he is running neck and neck with Kamala Harris, the Democratic nominee. Donald Trump has not commented on the remarks, but has since attempted implausibly to claim he did not know Tony Hinchcliffe, despite the fact that the podcaster has a huge following, opened Trump's rally, and was vetted by his campaign. However, Trump forced to wade into the issue on Tuesday evening, 29th of October, when he visited the Pennsylvania city of Allentown, where more than 50% of people are of Latino origin, a group also singled out for insults in Tony Hinchcliffe's Sunday routine. It is unclear if Hinchcliffe has previously workshopped the other jokes he delivered at Madison Square Garden. The routine featured a fusillade of racially offensive comments. He also invoked racist stereotypes about black people, Jewish people, and Palestinians. But the comment that drew most attention went, "There's a lot going on. There's literally a floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean right now. I think it's called Puerto Rico." The line provoked such an angry reaction, including among Republicans, that the Trump campaign was forced to disown it within hours. Daniel Alvarez, a senior campaign advisor for Donald Trump, claimed, "This joke does not reflect the views of President Trump or the campaign." A However, questions continue to be asked about why Tony Hinchcliffe was allowed to make such an offensive joke amid conflicting signals about whether the Trump campaign knew about it in advance. The Bulwark website reported campaign staff had asked all speakers to submit a draft of their speeches before they were loaded them into a teleprompter. The process reportedly resulted in the vetoing of one joke in which Hinchcliffe had planned to label Kamala Harris with an obscenity. The site reported sources as saying other incendiary lines were not caught because Hinchcliffe ad-libbed them, a questionable explanation given the sheer number of offensive jibes he uttered in quick succession. Even if true, it is unclear whether the Puerto Rico joke was read off a teleprompter. Teleprompter gives you the ability to edit your script on the fly, customize your reading speed, and shoot your video on any iOS or Android device in 4K, so you can stop fearing forgetting your lines and record with confidence. Bianca Rodriguez, the Deputy Director of Hispanic Communications for the Trump campaign, told the Spanish-language Noticias Telemundo television that staffers did not have absolute control over what speakers said at the rally. There was little doubting the seriousness of the political blowback. Angel Cintron, the chair of Puerto Rico's Republican Party, threatened to withdraw his endorsement of Donald Trump unless he personally apologized. The Catholic Archbishop of the island's capital, San Juan, Roberto González Nieves, wrote to the ex-president urging him to apologize to the people of Puerto Rico. NBC News also reported outrage among voters in Pennsylvania, where, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, 472,000 people of Puerto Rican heritage live. Seasoned Republican operatives saw it as a political own goal on an occasion that has been designed to project Trump's closing campaign argument. It was also seen as damaging to his electoral chances when he is in a knife-edge contest to win Pennsylvania, a key battleground state home to about 580,000 Latino voters. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. Donald Trump praised Puerto Ricans on Tuesday, 29th of October, during a Pennsylvania rally, just days after a comedian made a racist joke and referred to Puerto Rico as a floating island of garbage at one of his rallies. A little over an hour into a rally in Allentown in the Lehigh Valley, which has a sizable Latino population, the former president said, "Nobody loves our Latino community and our Puerto Rican community more than I do." According to U.S. Census data, more than 68,000 people, over half of the total population in Allentown, are Hispanic or Latino. A few blocks from the rally, a home had a Puerto Rican flag posted on the door. He also claimed that he had done a lot for Puerto Rico as president. Donald Trump drew ridicule for tossing paper towels into a crowd on the island after it was ravaged by a hurricane, blocked hurricane aid to Puerto Rico, and mused about selling the island. He also again praised the rally at Madison Square Garden, claiming the love was unbelievable, and told a rambling story about watching a SpaceX rocket that lasted longer than his discussion of Puerto Ricans. Many of the speakers on Tuesday, 29th of October, including the Puerto Rican official Zoraida Buxo, emphasized their Puerto Rican heritage, signaling the campaign's effort to win Puerto Rican voters in Pennsylvania, the key battleground state in this election, where polls show a tight race. Zoraida Buxo said, "We won't get rattled, we won't yield to ignorance, foolishness, or irrational thoughtlessness." According to a White House transcript, Senator Marco Rubio, another speaker at the rally, also joined Donald Trump on stage during the former president's remarks to share with the crowd comments from Joe Biden on Tuesday, 29th of October, in which the president condemned the remarks about Puerto Ricans and said, "The only garbage I see floating out there is his supporters. His demonization of Latinos is unconscionable, and it's un-American." After Republicans circulated a clip of the statement calling it an attack on Trump supporters, Joe Biden put out a statement saying he meant to refer to the comedian who made the joke. A small protest arrived outside the area just before the rally began on Tuesday. Some of the protesters were carrying signs that said "Latinos for Harris Waltz," while others wore the Puerto Rican flag. This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
More Palestinian women and children lose their lives in the Israeli genocide across Gaza, the northern areas in particular. Meanwhile, the IOF intensifies its attacks on Lebanon, targeting the country's hospitals and medical centers. Iran and Azerbaijan wrap up their joint drills in the Caspian Sea, aimed at boosting security and environmental cooperation. And welcome to World News. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. The Israeli regime's genocidal war on Gaza continues to claim more civilian lives across the besieged strip, especially in the northern areas. At least 33 more people have been killed and nearly 160 others injured in the deadly Israeli strikes during the past day. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, the Palestinian death toll since October the 7th of last year has topped 43,370 people. More than 102,260 others have also been wounded. The genocidal campaign in Jabalia and Beit Lahia, north of Gaza, has entered its 31st day. Regime forces also continue to disrupt civil defense in the area, leaving thousands of people without humanitarian and medical care. Our correspondent Abu Bakr Abed has more details regarding the latest Israeli strikes across the besieged Gaza Strip.
Just once again, Israeli quadcopters have thrown bombs on the vicinity of Kamal Adwan Hospital, targeting the third floor, which was previously targeted, and injuring more than 10 people at least, including displaced people and patients inside the hospital. At the same time, in Jabalia, the Israelis continue flattening houses and residential blocks across the entirety of the area. And in Beit Lahia, just some hours ago, two family homes were targeted. Seven people so far have been killed. Others were wounded at the same time. Also at the same time, moving to central Gaza here, the Al-Malghazi refugee camp, Israeli tanks have been mercilessly pounding the eastern outskirts of Al-Malghazi refugee camp since the early morning, particularly in the northeast part, in the northeastern parts of the camp. Moving to the southernmost part of the strip in Rafah, two people were killed and five were injured. All were transferred to the European hospital in Khan Yunis after Israeli drones targeted them in the streets. They were just going outside to